sweet potatoes. Welcome to Sports, the podcast that ends with a question. I just did it like an exclamation point. Sports, the podcast that ends with a question mark, but asks a lot of questions throughout it of people that we like in sports media and adjacent to sports media. I'm Katie Nolan. Today, I'm going to be joined by Rich Eisen, but he only has 45 minutes because he's very busy and important. And I respect that, even though I sound like I don't. And so it's just me right now, but he'll be here in a sec. And I'm going to use this time. Travis is here, too. He's just watching me creepily silent. Let's go talk to Rich Eisen. Hello, Rich Eisen.
Hello, Katie Nolan. How are you?
How are you doing? I'm okay, but let me ask the questions. How are you?
I'm sorry. I'm one of those control freak hosts that it's very difficult to be the A in the Q&A sometimes. So I'll just lay back. I'm doing fine. Thank you.
That's okay. We had Randy Scott on last week and I don't think I asked him a single question. He just kept asking me or talking to me. And I was like, I'll just got to let it go where it goes. But you know that better than anyone else because your interviews are always fun and good.
Thank you. I appreciate
that. The point of this podcast the last few months has been to just like talk to the people that I've met in this industry who I really like just kind of get to the bottom of like why I like them and also figure out how you're doing as a person, given that this has been a crazy year. So I guess a good jumping off point would be, what has the last year been like in your world?
Oh, God. All right. Well, at any point in time, a 12, 10 or 7-year-old could burst through my doors. It doesn't matter. There are no boundaries. They're coming home from school. So they actually just last week returned to school for the first time.
Congratulations.
And so, yeah, that's something that's, moved forward. Wow. So my show that I do every day, 2 days before Christmas 2019, I got a call from those who were in charge at AT&T to say that they've gone in a different direction and my show was going to be over by sometime in February. And then followed up by the end of that week to find out if the radio stations that had been partners with me for 6 years would want to continue me going on. And it was about a year into my existence with that radio network that they hired Colin Cowherd and put him in the same time slot as me and said that's no big deal. So when it came time to AT&T no longer owning my show, the radio partners said, yeah, that's the end of our relationship too.
Man.
So that's my Christmas week 2019, where I had a whole bunch of people that were employed on my show, and I just decided I wasn't going to let it go. So my show became, when I came back from the combine, my show was just a radio-only show on the network that was severing our relationship or saying they're going in a different direction or whatever. So I was a radio only show. I put it on YouTube. Then the radio relationship ended and I was only on YouTube and still on Sirius XM. And then NBC took my show and put it on their Sportsnet for the spring. And that led to a relationship with Peacock, which took my show for a year. And that's going very well. And then I have some terrestrial radio affiliates that have come back. And so I've rebuilt it from scratch.
Was that scary in the middle?
Oh, God.
When you got to the point where you were just on YouTube, did you feel that? Were you like, oh, shoot? Or was it like, I know we're going to get back and we just have to keep
going? No, not at all. I was, you know, I'll always bet on myself, you know. I'm sure you share that belief in yourself too, as well you should. I know, but you know what I'm saying? Like I was determined to not let this be the end of it. If I could, you know, I mean, you know, the marketplace is the marketplace. And I got AT&T couldn't have been, you know, better and kinder, if for the lack of a better phrase, in terms of an exit, you know, deal where I now own the show.
That's,
you know,
great.
And all of, you know, started a production company and own the marks and the logos and everything. And it was a very, very friendly deal that they gave me. And you know, everybody's going streamers. I don't know if this is the way you want this conversation to go, but you asked the question.
It goes wherever it's supposed to go.
Okay.
Wherever you want.
So this is, you know, what's been going on for me, you know, other than the fact, you know, knock on wood, I've been healthy. I didn't get COVID, nor did my wife.
What's that, you know, like?
I mean, oh, did you get it?
Mm-hmm. From my boyfriend, who I love very much, who you actually know. He brought it back from Salt Lake City, Utah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty cool.
It's kind of special for Dan to do that.
Yeah, sure. Call it that. For my birthday, too. It was
perfect.
Yeah, really.
Look at that.
Yeah. But anyway.
But at any rate, so, you know, everything's going in a streaming direction, and HBO Max does not have a live portal like Peacock has. So a show like mine is kind of built for a streamer that has a live channel portal within it. So at any rate, I had to reconfigure every strategy and figure out who wanted to still be a partner and who didn't, and, you know, not take it personally that anybody didn't, but understand that I still thought that what I could do every day was still of value. It's something I still wanted to do. I wanted to continue for people who had been with me for a while and see if I could save their gigs, to be very honest with you. And, you know, so I've got my show and a handful of contracted people who are still doing my show and putting food on the table through content that we create, whether it's, you know, an interview that makes news, or today talking about Tom Brady's breakfast smoothie that he TikToked out, you know, sort of
Tom
stuff.
Tom Brady's using TikTok?
He is. He is.
Well, good for him.
And so, yeah, when I was going through it, I had no idea where it would go. I had hoped that it would land somewhere and that there would be a home for it. But there was a lot of moments where it's like, well, if this is the way it ends, this is the way it ends. And, you know, I'm still an NFL Network host and employee, and I still have that I could do. But the stuff that I have built, from a podcast to a simulcast radio TV show, now a streamer, I didn't want to give that up. So I've literally been doing that every day and coming home and spinning plates figuratively and taking phone calls and Zooms and all of that through a pandemic. My God. So when you ask what I've been up to, I've literally been working on that day and night and trying to be a dad of three at the same time.
Man, you make me feel like I'm very lazy. I have a lot less bandwidth than you. And so I'm like, when things started to go bad for me, and I don't have a kid, I have a dog and she sometimes thinks that she's a child. But I don't have that much going on in my life. And there were days that I was like, I can't do all this, but you're good at, like, you don't really hit the inertia. I do. I'm like, if you stop me, then I'm like, oh, it's going to take a lot of effort to start this back up again. But you kind of kept rolling, which is,
right. But you also you've got quite a platform. Katie.
Yeah. 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 So that's why I've started using it this way. I've started, like, once I, you know, this used to be a podcast between me and a co-host who was my producer. She got laid off. And so, like, my boss and my producer and my co-host were all gone. And it was just me. And we had just gone up to 2 episodes a week. And at first I was like, what am I going to do? I'm alone. And then I realized that it's like, I don't know, just do what it feels right to do. And so this, you know, second episode we do every week, I'm like, let me just hang out with the people that I should have been grateful all along to have met and to know, right, and make sure I get to know them and hear how they're doing. And if it helps people, which a lot of people have, you know, every other episode, someone would be like, that was so helpful to hear that person be vulnerable. I'm like, well, good. Let's help people then, because, you know, there's like a it's tough. I mean, I know I bet there's a line for you in terms of what you do on NFL Network and what you do on your own show, where you feel like you can be more yourself on your own show, but there's still probably a yourself you can't fully be when you're on your show that you are as a person. And so I'm just here to remind people that we are people and that some of us are good ones. Not all of us, but some of us.
No, and you never know what somebody could take out of a conversation or something, you know. I'll never forget, you know, being on SportsCenter. You know, I was a single guy. I didn't meet my wife in the newsroom there. But, you know, I still, you know, we were friends for a while, and I got a crashing pad in New York City to have a social life, you know? And so I got a spot, like a one bedroom there on the Upper West Side. So I would do a Sports Center and then just lead foot it down to Manhattan, get in at like 2:30 or sometimes 3 a.m, depending on what Sports Center I did. And I'd live there. And so 9/11 hit, and my wife, she was my fiance at the time, she was in Los Angeles, and I, you know, was feeling so completely alone. You know, I was so completely just blown away. I'm a native New Yorker, and I just didn't know what to do. And, unbelievably, I did the 9/12, night, you know, overnight Sports Center with Stewart.
Man.
And I remember sitting there on the set thinking to myself, what am I doing here? Like, what? Because the storylines were essentially like, is football going to play? And there were some members of certain sports organizations that were on the planes. And, you know, those were the stories. And Stewart and I both looked at each other as, you know, the Sports Center theme is playing in our ears, and we're sitting on the sets. We're looking at each other like, can you believe like we're doing this? And, you know, we did it, and it was like, I was in a daze the whole time. So was Stu. And I did what I did, which is always, and I just lead footed it down to Manhattan, and, you know, going down the Upper West Side and going on one of the bridges to get into town. And, you know, the police stopped you and looked in your trunk of your car and whatever. And I'm like, holy, you know, I don't know if I could curse or whatever,
you can.
But
you can.
So I get down there, and I just get into my apartment, go to sleep, wake up the next day. And one of the guys in the lobby says to me, who works in the building, thanks for doing Sports Center last night.
Man.
Like, what are you talking about? And he goes, it was the first time I felt normal.
It's so true.
You know? And so look, we're fortunate that we get to do stuff like this. We're very fortunate. I mean, my God, you know, and I hope nobody hears what I have to say about when you ask what's going with your, you know, your year. And I'm sitting here saying my show almost went away and whatever, but you know, I mean, this is my life, and there were a lot of other lives affected by it and jobs. And I take that seriously. And, but it's also something that I want to continue to do and so on and so forth. And I know I'm very, very lucky. But sometimes we get caught up in our own skulls, you know, I just couldn't believe, like, the guy caught me flat footed. Like, thank you. I'm like, you have no idea. Like, I was lamenting it the entire time, like wondering if I'm actually with my presence talking about whether the SEC is playing football this weekend, actually doing a disservice. Like, am I actually disrespecting whoever just, you know, is still missing in at the time this burning hunk of metal that was an open grave in southern Manhattan? Like, am I disrespecting them? And here's a bunch of, it was not just him too, other people that I saw, like, man, thanks for doing your show last night. So you never know.
You can't do it all day. You can't sit at home and all day be consumed by, you know, grief and heavy. By the end of the day, you're just like, give me some, like, I've started watching cartoons on Boomerang Channel
because
I'm like, all right, all day I'm watching all the old ones, old Looney Tunes. They started making cartoons. They make me uncomfortable. They're too clean looking. Like, I need them to look like somebody drew them. They all look computerized now.
Of course. And I'm proud to say all three of my children know exactly who Bugs Bunny is and Foghorn Leghorn and Yosemite Sam and Daffy Duck. And, you know, they're all, they love Tom and Jerry. I mean, I'm
the classics.
I'm like, oh yeah. The Disney, you know, classics. Like, I've actually relearned a lot of them, watched them again through my children. And I've noticed that the parents always eat it. They always, and it's honestly like, they always eat it, you know, like Bambi's mom died. Lion King's dad died.
That's
true. It's
formative. It's
very formative. If you've seen Frozen, both parents die.
Well, spoiler alert, if you haven't, I guess.
I guess so. Like, we just watched the
Finding
latest
Nemo,
one.
The mom dies right at the beginning.
Name it. We just watched the latest one on Disney Plus this week, and Raya and the Last Dragon, because my kids wanted to watch it. Like, it was actually very nice. But the father of Raya in the very beginning, my oldest son, who's 12, he goes, Dad, I don't think he's going to make it. Like, it's, and I'm like, that's my son. Attaboy. And sure enough, man. You know, spoiler alert.
What a lesson. What a lesson. So but, you're still alive and yeah. Your kids are screwed. It's basically what I'm getting from that. Their stories won't be worth telling because you stuck around selfishly. You know, speaking of old SportsCenter, your name has been around in these circles for a very long time and carries a lot of weight with it. You are Rich Eisen. You host the Rich Eisen Show. You were on SportsCenter. Mm. Do you feel that? Like, I mean, I know it probably goes to your head in little ways that are very funny, but like, do you feel like you're a respected like name in this industry that like carries weight? What does that feel like to you? Because to me, just to give you my perspective, my name, I'm like, I tried it. And I think a lot of people called me an overnight success. And I think I took offense to that. And then I think I let it kind of guide me a little too. I don't think I'm a name yet, but I also say yet because I know I'm going to do stuff. But you, do you understand, do you realize what you've accomplished, or does it only benefit you to keep looking forward?
Well, I don't know how to respond to that other than the fact that the 7 years I spent there were amazing. It was my dream job. I got it at age 26. I walked into the newsroom there and every single person who I looked up to was now automatically a colleague from Olbermann and Patrick and Robin Roberts and Bob Lee and Charlie Steiner. Those were
those names.
They were doing the Charlie, Bob and Robin Roberts were doing the 6 o'clock Eastern and Dan and Keith were doing the big show at 11. And then Kilbourne was doing the late night show with a host of others.
God, that's right.
Uh-huh. And so I remember Kilbourne, you know, my second night, I think first weekend I did SportsCenter. I come upstairs. He's doing the overnight show, which was 2:30 a.m. at the time. And I had just done the midnight version or whatever. I don't know why they decided to put me on which ones they did. But I remember he comes downstairs from the third floor and he's in the stairway. I know exactly where I was. And I was going upstairs to go, you know, gather my things and go home. And he goes, "You're the new guy, huh?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And he goes, "You're doing a lot of the stuff that I do. Good stuff." And what keeps walking?
I mean, that's good or a threat.
But it was just weird, you know, and then when I do a show with him and he wants to take me out to dinner, and what that meant was go through the Southington, Connecticut drive-through of the Kenny Rogers Roland Roaster, during which he proceeds to tell me that his contract is coming up and he's got an opportunity and should he take it? Again, I'm 26. I'm fresh out of Redding, California. And the opportunity he described to me was the Daily Show as we're going through the Roland Roaster. And I'm like, listen, you know, killer, you're really good at it. Shame to see you leave, but maybe that's what you should do. Like, I don't know what to say.
Yeah, why was he asking you for advice?
I don't know. I think he was messing with me a little bit. I've since spoken to him about it. He doesn't remember any of it. Of course
not.
I remember all of it.
Of course.
Berman couldn't have been nicer. I mean, it was basically his world. We were all rent paying in it. I'll tell this story. I've told it in a couple other spots, but I'll tell this story to you too, since it's the
recycle. This is a recycle. You can skip.
This is not. I say that as a disclaimer in case, you know, you have heard it before. I don't know. Sometimes I bore myself, Katie. You know, so
well, you couldn't bore me, Rich. So okay, tell good. Your story Thank and pretend you. It's the first time.
Okay, so I'm like there for like 3-4 weeks, and ESPN has these banners that they hang on, you know, stadium sides of stadiums or whatever to let you know who's broadcasting the game. And it says ESPN worldwide leader in sports on it. And when I got there, I don't know if it's still doing it right now, but people would hang these banners on the prefabricated cubicle walls that create these little hallways in the offices there. And they would ask on-air talent to autograph it for charity auctions. Mm-hmm. So I was there for just a few weeks and I'm like, you know, is it presumptuous of me to sign this thing? Like people, you know what I mean? Like nobody knows who I am even in this building, let alone anywhere else. Like, is it presumptuous of me to say I'm actually with my signature improving the auction odds of the fundraising mechanism that these people are attempting? Like I was in my own head. I'm like wondering, when do I sign this thing? So Berman's doing a baseball tonight before my SportsCenter. He's in the makeup chair. I'm waiting to get in it. And I just said, hey, this is a perfect guy to ask. So I said, I introduced myself to Chris. He goes, I know who you are. You're the new guy. I'm like, yeah. And I told him my predicament, you know, When do I sign? Like, at what point, how many sports times, what is the threshold number I need to achieve in order to sign these things and be eligible to sign these things as an on-air talent? And he goes, how many of you have done one? And I'm like, yeah, I have. He goes, sign them all.
Amazing.
And I literally heel turned and signed every last one of them that I saw.
Hopefully with like a bigger font than anybody else.
I mean,
had
like
so
John
far.
Hancock, like literally
yeah, a little drawing.
It was the biggest signature on the entire banner. And I just felt like that was a moment where I felt like I belonged, that Berman was just like, relax, you know? And so I look back on that. It's kind of you to phrase it the way you phrased it. I just look back on it that I was very lucky to be at a spot that is viewed now even more so than at the time, you know, a classic television moment in our profession. And the fact that I had most of those times next to Stuart Scott, who is now viewed, I can't believe the word posthumously is actually applicable, but posthumously as a legendary figure, which, you know, he did not feel in real time, but is now appropriate to refer to him as such. The fact that I got to sit next to him and have all of those moments, you know, it's totally a treasure. You know, I never thought I would leave. Circumstances brought about a departure that brought me here to Los Angeles, where my children have grown up. And I feel like I've made a mark with the NFL Network, 18 years and counting.
That's wild. It's been 18 years.
18 years. Yeah. It's been 18 years since I took all my belongings and moved it west. So, man. You know, and so, yeah, I'm lucky. I'm very, very fortunate that moment in my time actually happened. You know, I was 26 years old. I felt like I had won the lottery and learned a lot on the fly. Great memories, you know, even though I'm closely associated with the NFL because the NFL Network, baseball's a love of mine. And, you know, I got to cover World Series there because of ESPN Radio had just acquired the rights to MLB rights on the radio. And I was at the forefront of that. So very, very lucky. And that's the way I look at it.
Was there ever a moment, and the answer to this can be no, not everybody's brain works like mine, but was there ever a moment where you were like, is this worth doing? Like, do they need me? Or like, is this what I'm supposed to be doing? Or like, should I just shut up for a minute? Because I've been talking for 18 years. Have you ever had that moment where you questioned? Because I didn't until this year. And I assume it's partially
stopped. Why do you question it?
Because I'm at a sports network, but I'm not a sports expert.
Yeah.
It's like, it was always going to be an uphill battle. And then when a pandemic hits, it's like a bigger hill.
Let's just put it this way.
I see you not answering the question, but I invite your advice.
Here's the answer to the question. I've always felt like there were two things I wanted to be growing up. Okay. I wanted to be a play-by-play announcer or a late night television host. Mm. I grew up watching Johnny Carson and then Letterman and then eventually, you know, Jon Stewart.
Astronaut and teacher for me, but keep going.
Okay. So that's what I wanted to be. And Howard Cosell also on Monday Night Football. I and Marv Albert and a couple of local broadcasters in New York. Those are the people I wanted to be. And I realized, you know, I did stand-up comedy in college. Mm-hmm. And I did that for 3 years. And I realized even though it was exhilarating to make an audience laugh, it was exhausting. And I went on the road one weekend and just found it a lifestyle I didn't think I really had in me, to be honest with you. And so I wound up with ESPN combining both, you know, like combining a little bit of humor and broadcasting. So I felt like I had arrived, to be honest with you. And I, even though, you know, there were times where I thought I wasn't getting the opportunities that I wanted within the building, which did eventually lead me to leave. You know, I never questioned whether I was doing the right thing.
That sounds awesome.
But what I'm hearing though, right now with like my situation with my show, for instance, is, you know, you're on Peacock. That's a streamer. and that's less than, you know, and I, well, no, here's the thing is that I see most of your stuff online, and I see it on Twitter, and I see it when you retweet it. And whenever you hit anything that I've hit, it explodes because you have a following where you're doing your broadcast. And whereas I'm technically, you know, broadcasting on TV or cable TV, and you might be doing a lot of your material on various other platforms, doesn't make it any less significant. And you are serving an audience of people. If you say you're not a sports person, like you're not.
Oh, I mean, I am by regular definitions, but I'm not ever going to be a sports center anchor. It's just not, I can't.
No, I know that, but that means that there's a bunch of people who might be watching ESPN, but aren't watching it in a way that you would think was a traditional sports center way that you're serving that audience.
Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of reassuring to hear somebody who doesn't doubt themselves. I've come back around on it. I'm feeling better. I've got good people around me that remind me of the things I forget about myself. But it's tough out here. There's a million places to make a million different types of content now. It's like every audience is so segmented. So it's very tough to look at the world. It used to just be like, do I want to work in sports? I will work at ESPN. And now even sports is split up into all these different things. And I wonder, as somebody who came up more traditionally, if that ever gives you like anxiety of like, what is the future of this industry going to
look like? Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know sometimes if, you know, what I'm doing works for an audience on Twitter or YouTube or other manners in which people are absolutely consuming things these days. You know what I'm saying? Like,
Do you worry about that? Like, do you let that affect the way you make stuff, or are you just like, I can't help it?
I can't. Yeah. Right? I cannot. Like, I am me, you know, trust me. I'm like everybody else in this profession. I'll spit you truth, as they may say. I saw how much Skip Bayless is making, and I thought to myself, should I do a heel turn? No, I'm serious. Like,
I think we all did. I think we all thought
honestly, I'm a 51-year-old guy right now. I would sign on a dotted line to be working at 69. Okay. Like, I would do that. Okay. And so here's a 69-year-old man that just signed a $32 million contract in television. And, you know, say what you will about him or whatever, and I've hardly ever met the man, but
I met him like obviously twice.
Okay, so you know, say what you will, that's beyond impressive. I mean, that's remarkable. And so I thought to myself, should I literally heel turn? Like, is that what should I show up to the Rich Eisen show tomorrow in a black suit, black shirt, with some sort of Rosemary's Baby amulet hanging from my neck, you know, and just basically start talking about things in terms of this team blew it or that team has no chance. You know, those are the phrases that you hear in our profession. Mm-hmm. No chance, absolutely no shot. Total. I mean, honestly, you've seen the videos. Tom Brady even tweeted it out of people in our profession. Those sizzle reels that you don't want to be part of saying that he's shot, he's done. You don't want to, you know, and so sometimes when you're on a show where you're constantly opinionating, you kind of hold your breath saying, am I going to appear on this? I don't think I said anything like that, but you never know. So I don't know, like, is that what people want? And it did kind of get me to pause because, you know, one of the new podcasts that I'm doing is born in the same way of what we're doing right now for yours, Katie, which is I want to be positive that the pandemic has torn up so many lives and has turned people upside down and it's created so many doubts that I'd love to do a podcast, which is what I'm doing, called Just Getting Started, where I'm going to have guests on, pull out their origin stories, find out how they got started. Everybody's got a tale where a door got slammed in their face or their doubts had been set. And how did they fight through it? And hope that there's something portable can be taken from that, even though, you know, it might not be applicable when you're talking to somebody who's at a certain level here with an Oscar on the shelf when somebody's just trying to make ends meet right now, potentially. But I still think there's a DNA and a spine of what makes somebody find a reserve and a resolve. It doesn't matter what profession. It just it really meets at the crossroads of we're all human beings, to use the phrase you used a while ago. And so, you know, when I first came up with the idea, do I have doubts? Will it work? Like, do people want to hear good news or feel like they can use a podcast as a resource? Or do they want to have a podcast to escape? And part of the escapism is saying, yeah, that player blew it. That coach blew it. Or I'm hearing somebody saying that player, that coach blew it. They don't know what the hell they're talking about. Let me tell them that they stink. And, you know, I'm going to get into that morass. And I'm not, you know, that's not me. That's not my DNA. But, you know, when I hear how much money that contract was, it made me think, like, is that the currency of our profession? And is that what is the measure of success? And that's a fact.
It feels like yes is the answer.
No, I don't know what the answer is.
No, I mean, I feel like I do. And it's like, you know, you can't compare yourself to other people, but you also have to be like, the network I work for thinks this is that worth that much. And so then you look at yourself and you're like, I don't do what that person does. And I don't want to. That's the one good takeaway for me. I mean, there's many, but from this year, the main thing I've learned is that, like, I have to stop thinking that someday I'm going to be comfortable pretending to be somebody that I'm not. Like, it's been kind of my thing that I haven't noticed is my thing. It's been a common review that people have of me is like, I don't know what you do, but you're uniquely you. And I'm like, that sounds like something you say to somebody you can't think of how to compliment. But now I hear it and I'm like, yeah, I kind of have put in a lot of work on becoming what I think to be a decent person. And it's constant daily work. And you make mistakes sometimes, but you hold yourself accountable. And now I'm like, I'm just going to be that person instead of, you know, worrying if I have to be more like Skip Bayless, which luckily I'm a few years away from.
No, yeah. Look, but the bottom line is you just have to be you. That's your fingerprint. Like that is really what
but it hurts more when people don't like you when you're just being you, because then you don't get to be like, well, you don't like me, but that's just the character I play on TV. It's,
well, you know what? Olbermann once told me this a long time ago. He once got me, like a 7-page letter sent to him when I first got on SportsCenter, the 2 a.m. show that I was doing, everything was a joke. Again, like I told you, I wanted to be in stand-up comedy. So I treated everything like a joke. Everything was a gag. Everything was make fun of this or have fun with it or whatever. Nothing was actual serious dissemination of news and information, which is why people kind of, you know, tune in, or certainly back then when they didn't have a phone to have the, you know, the highlight or the final score appear in the palm of their hand with an alert, you know, like they literally tuned in to find out what was going on. And I was not servicing that core audience. I was actually turning them off with my, who the hell is this guy? You know, joking around the whole time, and sent a letter to Olbermann to basically say, fix this guy or get him off the air, since he was the dean of SportsCenter. And he
say, what the hell did they write that letter to Olbermann for?
They did. That's what it was. And so he sent it to me.
Oh,
in an
boy.
Inter-office envelope. Okay. I strolled to the mailbox one day and it's an inter-office envelope.
That's just called a Slack chat now. I have no idea what an inter-office envelope
there
is.
There you go. That's what it was. The old, like, it was like this special envelope that you would write, you know, somebody's name in their department.
So you didn't
want
to walk over to where you had in-house mail folk?
That's what you kind of did back in the day.
Fun. Yeah.
It was it was one step up from those tubes that you see in those, you know, like you send it by tube to somebody. But I got it from him and it was with a cover letter. And him basically with a cover letter. Him with two paragraphs saying, you know, because we shared an agent and I think he, you know, he was trying to help. And it was tough to see, but I do take it, you know, as help.
What did the paragraph say?
It was basically like, you know, you've got it and you should never want somebody to write something like this. And you need to pull it back a little bit. And one day maybe you'll take over for me. And he wrote back in Olbermann-esque, like in parentheses, will next Wednesday be good for you? You know, and he wrote, Do not take this personally. This person does not know you as a person. He just has a connection to this program and this network, and you are being viewed essentially as
messing that up,
ruining it, right?
Yeah, and destroying it,
right? But I was just being me, and you know, I took it to heart, and I did pull back a little bit, but I still, you know, was myself. You know, when it all comes down to it, you are yourself. And I've seen you go back. I think I've even sent you a direct message. Like, what are you responding to these people for?
Yeah,
like, what are you doing? Like, you know,
I'm learning. It's
look, no, but it's just toxic. It's friggin' toxic.
It is and it isn't. I've gotten better at it. But the thing that I've always had a hard time explaining to people in this industry, because why would they feel this way? I came up with my audience. Like, I came up through them. I came up through YouTube, and I made a name for myself on Twitter. And so to me, it always felt really phony if suddenly I got famous and was like, screw you people. I don't care about your opinions at all. And part of it was having to learn that not to let the toxicity get to me, which I thought I was doing a good job of, but I found out that I wasn't. And now it's more like, this can be, because I've gone without feedback for the last few years of my career. There isn't a lot of information flow from the people who make decisions down to the people the decisions are made about.
That may be a good thing.
It is, in the sense that sometimes they don't touch a lot of the stuff you do, but it's bad in the sense that, like, I had never done television until 2013. In 2015, I had my own television show, and I was looking around like, somebody gonna tell me how to take the crazy ideas I have and make them actually work? And they were like, no one's gonna tell you. So just start doing it. And then
who came up with the idea of making me drink a 40 ounce beer on your show?
It was either me or it was Matt Collette. I think it was me, but I'm willing to give up credit. It's one of my credits to myself in my career. It was a moment where I could tell I learned. And I think I've probably told you this before, but I put that 40 down in front of you with the lid on it. And I was like, he's not gonna drink that. You should have opened it for him. And while you were telling a story, I reached over and I cracked it open. And as soon as I did, you took a sip. And I was like, TV, I'm getting good at it.
Well, I hate to tell you, I was going to drink it, whether you cracked it or not.
Just let there it goes.
I'm sorry.
Back to doubting myself.
But
again.
No,
I'm just going to retire. I think, you know, I've got enough.
No,
I
wouldn't
like to
do
spend
that
time
either.
With me. Look, no, but just, so like we, I but, never get, I was never getting feedback from my bosses. And so I learned that if I can have a healthier perspective on Twitter mentions, I can actually use some of it as constructive criticism.
Yeah,
people who tweet never think as much about the words they use to tweet at me as I think about the words I use, because it's my job to think about words. So I just had to stop holding people to the standard that they meant exactly what they said, because 9 times out of 10 they didn't. And you learn that when you respond and they go, oh my God, I'm a big fan, I never thought you'd respond. And you're like, aha. So I just learned that lesson. And now I'm like, it's a healthy relationship, in the sense that I don't let it get to me as much anymore, but I let it help me, and I try to use it to help other people, because like, that's, they got me here and I'm nothing without them. So if
I know
move,
that but you don't
gone.
If the ultimate success that you're searching for happens, you could still connect with them, but just understand that people who hit the send button on something that's toxic does not deserve your attention.
Yeah, but sometimes
or response.
It's a perfect setup, and I just want to they alley it, and someone's got to oop it. And sometimes it's worth
somebody's
it.
Somebody does have to score the basket.
That's right.
Sometimes, yes.
Otherwise, it's just an air ball. But I don't do the quote tweet thing anymore. I don't like when people go after other people. All of the mobbing that happens on the internet is exhausting to me, and it gives the empathetic part of my soul so much pain that I'm like, I can't watch any of this. But I will respond to somebody if I have something funny to say, because, Rich, that's all I have to offer.
That's right.
That's what I bring to the table.
Right.
Do you still keep in touch with like Olbermann and Dan Patrick, or is there bad blood I should definitely know about?
There's no bad blood. I have bad blood with nobody.
Nobody?
ESPN. No.
Oh, I got bad blood with two people.
Okay.
That's it. In my life, my whole life. One of them I've never met before.
My wife and I have done, did virtual drinks with Chris Fowler and his wife, Jennifer, several times throughout the pandemic. Dan is known in my household as Uncle Dan. His son and one of his daughters has babysat my children. KO will text me every now and then. I will text him all the time. Charlie Steiner, Bob Lee, Jeremy Schapp, I adore. Linda Cohn, Kenny Mayne. I'm in contact. Reese Davis, Leaves, Big Bag of Leaves, Steve Levy.
Steve Levy is like sneaky funny.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's got a good sense of humor. And by sneaky funny, I mean that he laughed at things I said at the Super Bowl and told me I was funny my first year at ESPN. And I was like, okay,
he'll
Steve
sneak
Levy.
Up on you. Yeah, yeah. Sure. Honestly, Berman comes on my show every now and then. I don't really have a personal relationship with him, but he sends a Christmas card to the house all the time.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. I mean, I honestly love my experience there. I have nothing but, honestly, you hear my dogs in the background, it means my kids are home. Like, literally, these children are ESPN babies because I met my wife.
Oh, wow.
The
did you name any of them Espen? Because that
I
was
did
a thing
not do the
did.
Espen thing. I did not. No, but my daughter's middle name, was chosen by me because we have two beautiful boys. My wife said a daughter's missing. She told me I needed to be a girl dad. And she's like, a daughter's missing in her life too. And I'm like, well, we got two kids, really? We want a third. And so she's like, this person's missing. If we go for our third and it's a girl, you get to name her. And I'm like, ooh, okay. Like that was part of, if you will, the package. But the minute that my wife says, I really want this, that she had me at hello, you know, but anyway, long story short, we try for the baby. The child, thank goodness, has no penis. And it is a girl. And the minute we find it's a girl, my naming rights are immediately downgraded to the middle name. Okay.
Oh my God.
All good. All good. We're all good. So her middle name, because of my diehardness and also the fact that I kind of liked it, that I married into a family of New Englanders. Her middle name is Mattingly after my favorite baseball player of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the fact that her middle name is Mattingly and she knows who it is. And oh, gosh.
That's pretty cool.
That. Yeah.
Mine's Beth.
Oh, is that after anybody?
I don't think so.
Okay.
If it is, I never met her. So.
Okay.
I think it just sounds good coming after Catherine. You got to go short one syllable after a polysyllabic word like Catherine.
Okay. So.
That's math.
Katie Beth Nolan.
Yeah. That sure. No, it's awful. It sucks. Rich, I have to let you go because your kids are home and I don't want to be rude and keep you here. But to reiterate for all of our listeners, the podcast.
Yes.
Called Just Getting Started. Right. And you can get that on
anywhere where all podcasts are gotten, Apple, Spotify. It's a Westwood One podcast. And Matthew McConaughey was my first guest.
What?
Damon John is this week. Are you posting this week?
Yeah, okay. Tomorrow.
Damon John. And then Soledad O'Brien is another guest coming up.
Okay.
And I have just booked for late March, early April, Dr. Fauci. Is going to be on
it. Damn. All right. I was going to say when you first mentioned your podcast that like I'm free and available, but now I'm looking at the roster of names and I'm like, I'll get back to you in a couple of years.
No, I would love to. I would love to connect.
Shut up. I'm not going to bully you into putting me on your podcast.
No, I'd love for you to call my show any day of the week, Kate.
I'm just going
to
call it randomly.
Please do it. You know? Okay. And so again, I just want to get stories of origin stories of people, how they got started and what roadblocks they hit and hopefully get people through whatever they need to get through in these crazy ass times. So
it's an admirable goal. And I only say that because I'm doing it too. So now we're both heroes.
Look at us.
Thank you so much for doing this. Thank you for letting me bully you into it on Twitter. I appreciate
not at all.
You so
I'm glad
much.
That I'm glad that I think you, you know, I'm saying for you not to respond to the trolls. And I think you responding to something I did and then responding to a troll led to somebody saying to you, what about him on your pod? Then you
to which I said, well, he's too busy. But if he weren't, he would send me a DM and let me know which Wednesday worked. And then you did. And it's
and I wrote, how about next Wednesday? And now here we are. So keep responding to the trolls. Screw what I said. Don't listen.
I've been waiting for somebody to give me a green light for so long. Thank you so much.
You are most welcome.
That's it for this week's edition of Sports. Shout out to Quip and to Full Sail University. And shout out to Rich Eisen, obviously. And shout out to 30 for 30 podcasts, she says. It's just 30 for 30 podcasts. Ugh, March 11th, 2020. The story of a day, the NBA was shut down and the pandemic became real for many Americans, as told by those who lived the events of that day and built entirely with archival and exclusive interviews, including Rudy Gobert and Dr. Anthony Fauci. March 11th, 2020 will tell the story of a day that started in one reality and ended in an entirely different one. 30 for 30 podcast presents March 11th, 2020. Subscribe and listen now wherever you get your podcasts. And a big thanks to you guys for listening now and again later on a different streaming service or two, depending on how much you liked the interview. Or you could always leave us a nice review wherever you're listening to this podcast, which, by the way, we read and we love them, like this one from Girls Manager 4 that says, "Da bomb is what this podcast is. Oy vey. Listen to it. Love it. Also, they absolutely got it right, eliminating chicken wings in the first round. Love you. Mean it." That is a hot take of a review. And of course, it's the one Travis picked. He likes people who are loud about their opinions, wrong or not. Also, this is normally the part of the podcast where if we went somewhere deep, I tell you, like, send it to somebody or I hope that it helped. I haven't talked to Rich Eisen yet. We only get him for 45 minutes, so I'm recording all this before. So if my tone doesn't at all match wherever this podcast ends up, forgive me for that. I have a funny feeling we're fine, but just in case, I'll probably re-record it because I'll be so embarrassed. And lastly, don't forget that you can always, I'll just speak it, leave us a voicemail at 860-506-5571. Say goodbye, Travis.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Rich Eisen. Bye. Love you. Mean it.